Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Day Val and
Beans. It's Beans.
Yes, it is.
So look, we just did an interview with Lee Smith. Oh, goodness. I love talking to Lee Smith.
I love being in the front row and just listening to most of it.
You had one of the most interesting questions of the entire interview, in my opinion.
Which one? The ending one?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So our last question was kind of like we stopped recording. And then Frank was like, hey, I meant to ask you. I should have done it. And then asked the question. And he's like, you know what? Let's go back on real quick and ask this question. So stay tuned until the very end.
Good
to the last drop, for sure. This was really, 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 really good. And if you like getting into the weeds a little bit and not staying so much surface level, this is the interview for you. What was your favorite part?
Oh, I mean it's just one long continuous tale of people in a media resistance front, a true resistance front meaning us, that is trying to, you know, just crack through the veneer of a completely wholly owned and operated, you know, puppet arm of the intelligence community, an intelligence community that does not serve any other purpose other than some sort of diabolical, you know, plot that has been formed to either prop up one candidate, defend another, and they just want to keep themselves and their world intact. And here we are, just whatever's happening behind the scenes, we always hope that it's being done by dutiful people that are not going to stop at anything to make things right. But on the other hand, it's really an ongoing fight for the American mind. I think Lee has said it a few times that, especially when it came to the point of introducing the coup plot. I mean, the whole idea that Donald Trump is a Russian asset. It was delivered up to a populace that had already been prepared mentally to take on any accusation that was lobbed at Donald Trump because of the conditioning that was going on beforehand with the racism and the xenophobia and the genocidal lunatic nonsense. So I think that there's so much implied in the story, in the telling of the tales and the storylines and these timelines that you'll hear with this talk with Lee. There's so much implied here because it goes beyond just the nuts and bolts of the who, what, where, why, when. It goes all beyond that. It's how was the average American mind prepared to accept this nonsense so that this coup could have any kind of a chance?
Yeah, it's a good summary of stuff with, you know, obviously I asked some questions that got a little bit more in depth into some of the things that we've learned over the past couple weeks. We'll just let him go. How about that? It's Wednesday. We'll shut up now. And here's our interview with Lee Smith. Lee, thank you for coming.
That is very, very kind introduction. Thank you guys for inviting me on again. I've really been looking forward to this and I can't tell you how much I appreciate the invitation.
Oh, awesome.
To speak with you and all of your great listeners.
That's great because they need you. And so,
well, I need them. Seriously. I mean, the amount of information that your listeners are aware of and provide and circulate, it's always very helpful and very instructive. So yeah, it's a big team effort here.
For sure. So I want to start by kind of making a foundational point. So okay. I don't know if you've heard about James Gagliano, the former FBI.
Yes.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
He did a podcast with Matt Lewis that I was watching today. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the biggest problems with this story is that people don't know the details and they make wide sweeping assumptions then. Mm-hmm. That have been planted in their heads by the media. And when you went on with Jan just last week, it was a fantastic mm-hmm. interview. You again hammered this point about the media home. Share what the dangers of what they've done are and whether or not you think they should be held accountable for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they are being held accountable in lots of different ways. I mean, you know, they're hemorrhaging numbers, and you know, it's sad. This is an industry, a profession that I'm, you know, what I mean, I'm a journalist. I've done this for my entire career. My father, my grandfather, my great grandfather were all involved in this business. They have damage their reputations. I mean, the way they're held accountable is twofold, really, right? I mean, listeners or viewers, news consumers, readers, whatever, just turn them off and realize that these are not useful, reliable sources. That's the first way. The second, more activist way, I think, you've heard Congressman Nunes, I believe it was last week on Lou Dobbs, when he was talking about, look, I keep telling Republicans not to speak to these guys. Why? Because what they're doing is they use Republicans, they use conservatives to legitimize their project as though they're really talking to both sides. So it's real news reporting. It's real press, but it's not. They're just using, they use Republicans as rodeo clowns, right? That's the purpose. They just stick them in the middle of their operation to legitimize what they're doing. Now, the people this really hurts, of course, are their constituents, right? Because that's who the media is going after. They're going after their constituents. So I think a more activist way to hold the media accountable is, first of all, to hold our elected officials accountable. If for whatever reason, Congressman or Senator so-and-so continues to go on CNN, it's like, we're counting. We're looking at all of your appearances on CNN, and you go on there all the time. And it's not like voters from this state or that state are watching you on CNN all the time. So why are you going on? Why are you doing this? You are aiding people who are not only targeting you, but targeting us. Mm. So that's how I see, that's the more activist way to hold them accountable. And I think it's a, very powerful and useful position. And I hope that, you know, I hope that listeners will take that seriously. Let's make our elected officials accountable for speaking to people who are operatives. We're not talking about a legitimate press anymore. The nature of the media has changed profoundly over the last 20 years for a number of reasons that, you know, you and I have spoken about before and that I've written about before. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, keep rehashing the same material and boring people more than I already do. But the point is that over the last 20 years, the media has changed profoundly. We're not talking about a partisan press anymore, which is livable, right? It's, you know, you have to still read through it and understand the different partisan angles. But that was 20 years ago. It's not what we're talking about now. We're talking about political operation after political operation run through the press. It's hardly any surprise that last week, Washington Post reporters who carried an enormous Trump-Russia collusion load were in there reporting a piece saying how the president had been warned again and again and again about the coronavirus stuff. Right. Ambassador Grinnell, acting head of the DIA, they asked him for comment. He said, "That's not true. You don't have it. Your reporting is not correct." Right. Ambassador Grinnell tweeted about this to point out what was wrong with their story. They didn't care. But again, that's what I mean. These are operations, and the people who are running these things using the media as platforms are operatives. That's my larger point about the press.
Well, I mean, it's a good point. So speaking of Grinnell,
who's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, Grinnell's been fantastic, by the way. And he just released a letter. You just tweeted it 11 minutes ago, actually, where he's saying the transcripts are all ready. You should release them. And if you don't, I will. We had Ratcliffe yesterday sitting in front of the Senate for his confirmation hearing. So let's unpack real quick. What do you think is in some of these transcripts? Like Dearlove was interviewed. What do you think's in there that Adam Schiff doesn't want to get out, just like the impeachment? And then, as a part two, what do you think about how Ratcliffe handled some of those questions yesterday, specifically about Russian interference, given his experience on the HIPC?
Right. Well, let's start with the first one. I think it's just a basic fundamental point. I mean, as I reported in my book, The Plot Against the President, Kash Patel, who is now Ambassador Grinnell's deputy, over at DNI. What he did was, during these interviews, he asked people, quite frankly, do you have evidence of collusion? Do you have evidence of conspiracy? Do you have evidence of coordination? As he points out, he says, I'm not asking you what it looks like or what it feels like or what you heard. Do you have evidence? If you have evidence, we'll get subpoenas. We'll bring people in. We'll find it. We're not here to defend Trump. We're here to get to the bottom of what happened. And obviously, we know that no one had evidence of collusion. That's what Schiff doesn't want to get out. It's very simple, very basic. Senior Obama officials are now gathering from what Mr. Patel told me from my reporting. Senior Obama officials are on the record saying, nope, no evidence of collusion. That's what he doesn't want getting out. And that's why the press, the media is hardly clamoring for release of this collusion-related information. Because again, it's just more documentation showing that the entire collusion narrative was absolute nonsense. So that's why that's what's going on over there. And I assure you, both acting DNI, Ambassador Grinnell and Mr. Patel are eager to release these transcripts if Representative Schiff refuses to release the transcripts. I imagine they will take great pleasure in releasing these transcripts.
Oh, God, I hope.
To further show what's going on. So I imagine we'll be seeing them one way or another relatively soon. Now, the other part of your question was about Congressman Ratcliffe. Yeah, I thought he walked very, mm-hmm. very fine, very fine. He walked a tightrope in rough winds.
Yeah,
right. Because he was on, you know, he was with the House Intelligence Committee. And, you know, they put together their Russia report. And here he's walking into a committee which just released their, their Russia report a couple of weeks ago, you know, which is finding that the CIA and the FBI and the entire intelligence community did a great job. So he's got to walk in there. And he has to balance those things out pretty carefully. I thought he did a terrific job. He has one very big thing. He has one very big thing going in his favor, and as we saw today with this Byron York story talking about how Ambassador Grinnell will release these transcripts if Adam Schiff does not. Like they can refuse to confirm Congressman Ratcliffe. However, if they do not confirm Congressman Ratcliffe, that will mean more Ambassador Grinnell and more Kash Patel. Mm-hmm. And so one way or another, there is going to be pressure on the rogue operatives in the intelligence community and on Capitol Hill. It was a very interesting move, it appears, what President Trump did. He said, well, I'm going to put in Ambassador Grinnell. He'll put pressure on these guys. It will be relentless, and they'll be happy to let Congressman Ratcliffe in.
Who hopefully will do the same thing.
I imagine he too will be eager to get to the bottom of the different things that started happening in 2016 and continue up to this very day.
So that all being said, there is all of this happening with the case of General Flynn, which you touched upon mm-hmm. very heavily in your book, and you know Devin Nunes has been invested in for a long time, and everybody knows the details for the most part. Frank and I have spent mm-hmm. a lot of time.
Yeah,
I have some questions though for you mm-hmm. about Stefan Halper.
Mm, okay.
So Stefan Halper, from my research and from everything, it seems like he's behind a lot of this. So, what's your opinion about how much input Stefan Halper had into the dossier? Is he two sources in the dossier, A and B, and they just made him look more important?
No. Well, let's go to the IG report, which is really important. And, you know, it's an important, that's a very important document. because that put out a lot of important facts. Let's start back with that, and then we'll walk into the dossier, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So what the IG in the IG report, Stefan Halper is source two, and you see in the documentation, you see what the FBI is describing to the inspector general's inspectors, right? They're talking about how, oh wow, isn't that interesting? I just wanted case agent one, who we now know is Stephen Soma. I just wanted information on what a foreign policy silo looks like in a presidential campaign. Hey, I know a guy I can ring up. What about what about Stefan Halper? And then we at the FBI and the Crossfire Hurricane team were just amazed to find out that Stefan Halper knew all these people. I mean, wow. Yeah. We told him about George Papadopoulos, but he asked us about Carter Page, and wouldn't you know it, we were looking at Carter Page. And Michael Flynn, he'd had a run-in with him, as well as Paul Manafort. Amazing. So yeah, Stefan Halper is a central figure, and you see that he is in the middle of the four components of the Crossfire Hurricane investigation, right? They send him out after Papadopoulos. They send him out after Carter Page. Information that he had access to certainly appears to be central to the investigation they opened on Michael Flynn. So yeah, he's a really big deal. When you ask if Halper is himself a source A and B, yeah, my for the Steele dossier, yes, not for the IG report.
Correct.
Right. My opinion is that, yeah, a lot of the so-called reporting that goes into the Steele dossier comes from Halper. I think that's fairly clear. If you put together the different things that he's, how long he's known, former head of Russian intelligence, Trubnikov, and how this is alleged to be a source for Christopher Steele, because Christopher Steele goes around telling everyone that this is one of the sources.
Which is what people doing this kind of work always do, right? Right, Lee Smith?
Right. Naturally, of course. Well, this brings us to a point I think we wanted to discuss. So let's touch on this one very quickly, because I think this is important too. So over the with the declassification of different footnotes that had previously been redacted in the IG report, there was a lot of alarm going around that, look, it appears that Russian disinformation had been fed into the dossier, right? The important thing to understand is the entire premise, the entire legitimacy or ostensible legitimacy of this entire thing was that it was based on high-level Russian sources, people close to Vladimir Putin, people close to major Russian decision makers. In fact, the most important claim in the thing, the most famous thing, is of course the golden shower stuff. That's that's the tabloid headline, the golden showers, and that's why that's in there, right? But the most important claim, the reason that they start an investigation on the Trump campaign, is because of the claim that Trump has been compromised by Russians. And who says so? Oh, a Russian spy chief. Now, that's in June. So you're telling me that the FBI, it never crossed their minds that all of this might be Russian disinformation by June? They had to wait until January 2017 before they got another report saying, hey, this might be Russian disinformation. It doesn't pass the smell test. There is no Russian disinformation there, right? Now we know from the Flynn documents, there are no Russians in the room when they're deciding to frame General Flynn, right? They don't ask Putin. They don't say, Vova, what do you think? Should we frame General Flynn? I don't know. Dmitry, what do you think? It's all American spies. That's who's framing General Flynn. But I did want to say one thing. If you go back, because this struck me last night, if you go back and you look at the documents, right, there's a lot of concern about the interviews of General Flynn, whether these were, it appears that this is It appears that it was appears pretty clearly now that this was edited to help frame General Flynn. But if you go back in the document right now that's standing in for that, for the interview of General Flynn, you go back and you read it, and General Flynn was actually in Moscow in 2014 for a leadership seminar with Russian military intelligence. And, you know, it was kind of a big deal. General Flynn was the first DIA chief in Moscow since the Cold War. And you look at how they treat him, right? This is Russia is an often adversarial power, right? But they treat him with respect. They treat him as a serious man. They treat him as a counterpart. So the Russians treat General Flynn with respect. And what happens? What do these documents declassify the last week show? That in his own country, at the FBI, he was treated with disdain and contempt. And that's evidence that these people are animals. Mm-hmm. The people who set up this operation are animals. They decided to throw people's lives away. They decided to target them and hurt them with no regard for them as human beings, no regard for their own dignity, for their own careers, for their families, for their life savings. The people who set up General Flynn and the rest are animals.
I agree with you. It's getting, you know, we did a whole breakdown on Ben Wittes trying to defend the conduct of the FBI and what they did with General Flynn. But I want to bring something up because I'm seeing it's been really kind of confusing to me to see how many people are actually jumping on this Russian disinformation bandwagon. And it hurts me inside because I feel like they're giving maybe inadvertently a pass to the FBI. I mean, you're seeing this even yesterday, but before the Senate, they talked about how Russian disinformation influenced the actions of the FBI. And I'm scratching my head, Lee, like if they fell for this, if this is real, we're in a world of hurt.
And let me just interject on this point here too, because it goes back to what Lee was saying about the nature of the media, where 20 years ago, even though I wasn't really paying attention to much 20 years ago, you can put up with the idea that people have their biases and sometimes it leaks through with the way that they, you know, they editorialize a little bit. But if you learn how to read the news, you can separate what the information is from what the thoughts of the author is. And then, of course, you take a look at this and you say, well, we have been going for so long, and Lee's book is such a fantastic example of all of the coverage that we never got while this stuff was unfolding. We've only gotten one side of the story. We've only had one narrative build. We've only had that momentum go in that direction for so long that right now, when we should be finally getting some validation for being, you know, out and out skeptics and saying, no, this is wrong. Right. We're not even getting the satisfaction of being right. We're now everybody else is being given a chance to be painted as just maybe a patriot who got duped by a foreign power.
I think it's probably not too big a worry. As I've said before, I think it's going to surprise some people if there are indictments. It's going to surprise some people to hear their words used in defense of different people who have been charged, right? To hear, oh, this illustrious conservative figure says it's Russian disinformation. Mm. So people are going to be surprised to hear that come back at them. But I, again, it's not something I'm too concerned about. I mean, I can, you know, walk people through it as I did before. It's like the whole thing starts with what a Russian spy says. Right. The FBI in many ways has proved its, you know, we like to think of the FBI as a super competent organization. Clearly, it's not omni competent. Right. As we have too many examples all this time. But you cannot tell me that when a document, when reports enter an organization like that, sourced to a Russian spy chief, and no one says, wait a minute, let's check this out. Right? They didn't check it out. Why didn't they check it out? Because they knew it was Clinton disinformation.
Yeah.
That's why they didn't check it out. The note about the report on Russian disinformation comes in January 2017. It's part of a massive cover-up organization. The case, presumably, the case, if charges are brought, the case is going to be strong that U.S. Attorney John Durham is making. There's not going to be any defense like, oh, we were fooled by Russian disinformation. As I said before, if you look at the big picture, what do we learn from the Michael Flynn story last week? There are no Russians in that room. These are Americans who are doing it. It's their operation. The Russians have nothing to do with the operation. So again, it's a little frustrating, but it's a concern that will pass, a concern that will pass quickly. The more and more documentation that we have coming out, the clearer it will be to people who have, for people who are saying this now. The other concern is my larger concern is just with people understanding. It's not about cases that may be brought. It's about a larger case of understanding, right? So how is that? How do people argue that, oh, it might be Russian disinformation? Well, it's sourced in part to what Glenn Simpson said. So now we're going to get into this after 3+ years. Now we're going to start to get into a place where we're going to bargain over how much of what Glenn Simpson said may be true. You can't understand this story if that's your starting point, right? You can't understand what happened if you say, like, well, there's no collusion, but some of the things he said might be true.
Yeah.
There's nothing in there that's true, right? We start with that assumption, and that's how you go forward in the story. If you, does that make sense?
Absolutely.
That's the clarity in the story. What he says immediately is to be discounted.
It's crazy because I sit here and as you're talking, like, questions are springing off in my head about things we should talk about. Like, for example, Christopher Wray yesterday just came out and admitted guilt for the first time in goodness knows how long, hidden in his statement about what former staff at the FBI did was an admission of guilt in the click case of General Flynn. What do you think about Christopher Wray's role in all of this right now? I argue that he's sort of a figurehead FBI director and AG Barr is really pulling the strings. What do you think?
I mean, I don't know what the relationship is like between the Attorney General and the FBI director. I think they're, given the amount of documentation that's been secured by both Mr. Durham and Mr. Jensen, the U.S. Attorney from Missouri, I think it is a very serious concern. So why didn't Director Wray supply all of this information beforehand? Where was all this? Why when Sidney Powell, she's still asking for the original 302. Is Mr. Wray on this? So I think there's lots of concerns about what's been going on at the FBI since Comey was fired, since McCabe left. There's a lot of concern over there. And again, it's hard to get too much detail on it right now, but I assume that there are people in the administration who are very concerned about about the track record of the FBI even since Comey left.
I mean, maybe he can write a training manual about it and we can all move on to a happy day.
I mean, we actually know what would happen, right? If someone was serious coming in saying, like, you know what America needs, a strong FBI, because we got to protect Americans from terrorists. We got to protect them from organized crime. And for goodness sake, we do have to protect them from hostile foreign powers. Someone like that would come in there and say, like, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. I'm going to race Michael Horowitz. I'm going to race Durham to it. They can put whatever investigations you want, but I need 15 of my top guys getting to the bottom of this right away, because what it's doing to the morale of this organization is terrible and destructive. And the American public, I mean, for Pete's sake, I mean, there are no conservatives or Republicans around the country who believe us.
Yeah.
And what happens instead? They send a SWAT, what is effectively a SWAT team after Roger Stone. So that tells us where that bureau is under the current leadership, right? Have they been turning up every stone to find out what's going on? Sure doesn't seem that way.
No, and a lot of people don't realize. So AG Barr appointed Jensen to look at not just, correct me if I'm wrong, but not just the General Flynn case, but all of the cases under the special counsel?
I think it's specific cases. I don't know if he's looking at all of the special counsel cases, because that's I'm just not sure about that.
The four big ones.
It may be that you might be right. I thought he was certainly now he's focusing on the General Flynn case, but it's quite possible he's looking at the other ones too. I thought that he was specifically tasked to look at this right now, but I'll have to go back and check.
So even if that's the case, you know, there's obviously a lot of frustrated people out there that are pounding their fists on the table like enough is enough. They're just drawing this out so that by the election it's over and God forbid Donald Trump doesn't win, this all goes away into the sunset. I don't know. What do you think about John Durham bringing in he was like an organized crime specialist. I forget his name now. Why would they need that sort of a talent on the team to take a look into what happened during 2016 and after?
The thing that's been of interest to me is how much larger that team has gotten. He continues to ask for resources, which he's getting. I assume this is not as big as the Mueller special counsel investigation, though, which was just throwing resources at a cover up, right? Yep. That's what was going on. There was a cover up and roll up as many people as possible. So that's why they needed a lot of resources. It strikes me that the Durham team is a much, much narrower and I hope sharper instrument. I just think that they're looking for as many resources as they can get to get to the bottom of what happened.
And they've been doing this. And again, I brought this up. So James Baker, who we know now was involved in the General Flynn stuff as well, at the FBI General Counsel, was testifying in front of Meadows and Jim Jordan back in 2018 and mentioned Durham's name, right? Mm-hmm. When you're investigating a leak between Baker and David Korn, I believe it was, if you're a U.S. attorney and you find other criminality as you're investigating that leak, you don't just stop and say, well, that's not in my purview, like Mueller would say. That's not in my purview. You continue that investigation. So I'm arguing that this has not been going on for a year. This has been going on for much, much longer than that in terms of investigating.
Yeah, other people, it's a very interesting point. I believe I've seen you make that, and I think I've seen some other people make that too. I mean, look, they have access to basically everything they want, right? I mean, they probably are going to have to fight for stuff. But they have access to what they want. At a certain point, they realized the different documents that they needed, right? They understood the different things they needed to make the case. So yes, I would imagine that they're very, very much up to date and very well informed, and they have a pretty good picture of what happened. And actually, the General Flynn case shows you people are asking what Durham is doing. Right. Well, when is Durham going to bring charges? What's going on? So this is evidence of what Durham has been doing. Right. They have these documents. They know what's going on. Right. They read these documents. They saw what had happened and they made these documents available.
Well, that's yes. Right. Yes.
So now that we know, when people ask Durham this, what's Durham doing? When's it going to happen? I don't know. But people want to know what he's doing and what he's looking at. Now we know we have pretty good sense of what he's looking at and what he knows, right? He knows that this team knows they set up General Flynn. What's the larger picture? How do you fill it out from there? But this is a piece of the puzzle of this larger operation. They saw this piece of the puzzle very, very clearly, right? So now they're filling out the rest. So I think it should make people, not just because it will, you know, hopefully provide some relief to General Flynn, but also make people optimistic in terms of, yes, they do know what they're looking at, and they're figuring out how to put together the rest of the puzzle.
Yeah, I am very much encouraged by what we've been seeing lately, because, you know, General Flynn, if he would have stuck with his old attorneys, would have already been sentenced, and this may have all gone by the wayside, but because he chose to fight it out, here we are, and we see.
Well, you're right. I should point out another important thing that happened here. Yes, you're right. He was shamefully and tragically misrepresented by his previous attorneys. And another important thing here that happened, and that I'm, you know, which I report in my book, I mean, when Congressman Nunes and when the Objective Medusa team fights to get declassified from their March 2018 Russia report, right? They have both Comey and McCabe saying that the agents believed General Flynn was not lying. They fought to get that out, right? And that was hugely important information, right? That was very important information to put that out there and to have that out. I mean, it didn't, you know, it didn't turn the court case over as Sidney Powell's tremendous heroic efforts have done, but it was very important to get that out there as a block. So there are other, you know, there are other details that have surfaced here that we know have been helpful to uncovering the different things that have happened, but have also helped people in different ways. So I think that's an important point too, because the work that team, again, was what my book is about, but I know that your listeners respect them tremendously too. So just wanted to make that point.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think that maybe you can speak to this. Like, a lot of this has to go to, there's two arguments here. You can release these documents so that the public gets to see them, like we're talking about the transcripts, et cetera, because that kind of conditions or gets the public ready for the bigger picture. However, then there's the argument being made by some people. Well, if they're releasing these, this means that they're not using these documents in any investigation because they wouldn't let them out into the public sphere if that were the case. Which are they balancing that? Because they need to educate the public before they can, if for argument's sake, they're going to indict like an Andrew McCabe, let's just say, they need to get the public ready for that with the actual facts beforehand, correct?
Well, what parts of the public are you talking about?
The general public.
Well, unfortunately, our public sphere is profoundly split, and that's because of the origins of this operation. Mm-hmm. This is what Russiagate did, right? That's what happens when you insert a conspiracy theory. I mean, I've talked about this before. I'm sure I bore you with this phrase. But this is what happens when you inject a conspiracy theory into the U.S. public sphere. You drive half of the people crazy. Right. The people, maybe not as many as half, but let's say the people who are following Rachel Maddow, the people who are watching the Russiagate impresarios at CNN. Right. The people who are watching Andrew McCabe or James Baker or John Brennan, or James Clapper explain themselves. They will never accept this. If there are indictments, they will never accept it. You can put all of them in orange jumpsuits. And the people who have unfortunately been poisoned by this conspiracy theory will never believe it. It will be two generations away from that. If you're talking about other people, if you're talking about the audience, if you're talking about the part of the American public who recognized what was going on, and that part of the American public that Congressman Nunes started to win that share of the American public when he went on TV, explained what was going on as they released more and more documents, they're already pretty prepared for what this looks like. Right? So
there's three groups. There's us, who I think are in those groups. There's the group of people you spoke about who are addicted to Maddow. And I think there's about 10 to 15%, maybe 20 in the middle. Right? Those are the people I'm talking about. Because if you swing those folks, getting them ready and teaching them what happened over, then you've got technically a mass of people who are supportive of what's going on, which makes it a lot easier than for a public public to embrace the fact that all of these former heads of very important institutions are going to be arrested and put in jail.
The effect of indictments, if people want to know what happened, then they can go back and read it. They're not going to find it. They're not going to find those explanations in the New York Times or the Washington Post, or CNN or MSNBC. But there are places they can go back and find it. I think right now that they can't really be spending. Unfortunately, it's not really a matter of educating the U.S. public sphere on what's been going on for 4 years. It's really a matter of them making cases I imagine there are different documents that, right, they don't want to show right now because these are part, these would be part of the cases that that are being made. And, you know, the transcripts that are going out, they're available for their, Congressman Nunes and his team, of which Kash Patel was a central part, they've always wanted this information out. That was the entire job, to get this information to the U.S. public. So they're continuing to do that. It continues to be an important thing and made available for people who want to know what happened. But there's not much you can do to tell people, say, hey, you should read this. Do you know what these guys were doing? You should, you know, you should pick up and understand what happens if some of these guys wind up in orange jumpsuits.
So to that point, a not so much talked about but very confusing portion of this story we spoke about this morning is Sergey Milyen.
Yeah. Yes.
Can you do can you do a breakdown for folks about him? Because I just want to listen.
I think Sergey Milyen's story is central. And actually, I think it's the it was intentionally confused by both the FBI and by Clinton operatives and the press. They intentionally made this story confusing, right? But let's go again to the IG report, where there's this alleged conversation between a figure, the FBI, and it appears the inspector general is calling the primary subsource, referred to in Fusion GPS literature as the collector. That's the person Steele is supposedly getting all of his stuff from, the collector or primary subsource. Under him are other subsources, including supposedly person one, who is that's who they that's the role that they fit Sergey Milyen for, right? He's a source for the dossier. If you look at that alleged conversation between the primary subsource and person one, Sergey Milyen, it's absurd, right? How does the primary subsource get all of his information from Sergey Milyen? Oh, yeah, it's in a 15-minute phone call. He didn't identify himself, but I think it was him because I recognized the voice from a YouTube video I saw, right? It's nonsense.
Nonsense. Why'd they target him? So why would they pick him of all people? How did he fit into all this that he was chosen to be targeted with that sort of nonsense?
He identified himself as a Trump supporter. There was an article in the Russian press in April 2016 where he came out as a Trump supporter, said, I like Donald Trump very much. I worked on a project in Florida, real estate, and I think he's a great guy, and I think he's really important. And it appears that that's when Fusion GPS decided to put him into the middle of their operation. And we can ask the same thing about all of the people they targeted.
Yeah.
Carter Page, George Papadopoulos. Except the difference with Sergey is, with his story, Mr. Milyen's story rather, excuse me, the difference with his story is it's actually the clearest, it's actually the clearest example of what Fusion GPS and the FBI did. It's actually astonishing once you look at it closely. I mean, Glenn Simpson brags about handing over Sergey Milyen to ABC News. That's before the election. So before the election, Sergey Milyen is framed and set up to be one of the one of the many points of collusion between Trump and Russia. And his name appears in a couple of other publications, including Financial Times, The Daily Beast. So before the election, he's supposed to be one of their points of collusion. Then after the election, the FBI, again, this is the way to understand the IG report, the Russian disinformation stuff and everything. No later than January, the FBI has moved into massive, massive cover-up mode, right? They continue to want to spy on the Trump team, now the White House, but they're in massive cover-up mode. Part of their cover-up is to start grabbing anything who looks like a source that they can say, oh, yeah, there was a real source. And they grab Sergey Milyen, and his name is first in the Wall Street Journal, I believe it's January 24th, piece identifies him as a source. And then the Washington Post, I guess about a month and a half later, said, yeah, he's a source. He's an unwitting source. Right? He didn't know he's a source, but he's really a source. So, I mean, all of these other people were set up too. But this is the one in which they're really bragging about setting him up. So it's a very upsetting story. And as I've said before, I mean, add his name to the list of people who were who've been targeted.
He denies
Svetlana Lokova.
Yeah.
I mean,
he obviously denies all of it. And I think that he is, I've tried to interact with him to get to the bottom of it. And he's just, I don't know that he knows who the heck anybody is he can trust anymore, to be quite honest. And I think that that's a lot of what goes into this. So people have a lot of questions about him, and, you know, he doesn't necessarily help himself because he doesn't react in the way you'd expect someone who's trying to get their story out there to react.
Different people. I mean, I get it, but different people have different approaches, right? Different people have different approaches. I mean, and if you've been targeted by these people, including the FBI, and this is one of the things that we know from the IG report, is the FBI investigated him. Why? I mean, it looks like what they did with Cleta Mitchell, too. Glenn Simpson gave his name to Bruce Ohr. Bruce Ohr turns around and goes to the FBI. We don't know. But of course, Sergey Milian has no detail on how they started an FBI investigation on him.
Yeah.
That's a story the FBI needs to tell.
Yeah.
Right? That's a story we need from the FBI. I mean, so this is how it works. That's how America was working at a certain point. Glenn Simpson goes to Bruce Ohr. Bruce Ohr goes to the FBI and boom, you got an investigation on you. Cleta Mitchell's name is all over the press for some nonsense about the NRA and Alexander Torshin. And now Sergey Milian is under investigation because Glenn Simpson says he assesses that he's a Russian intelligence officer. I mean, what absolute nonsense. It's disgraceful.
It sure is. And I've got two more things on that same sort of a tangent for you. Carter Page. Carter Page was under a counterintelligence investigation in April of 2016 in New York, right? Then the FBI field office out of D.C. decides they need a FISA warrant on him for the same thing. My argument is, and I don't know if you agree with me, if it was so serious, why didn't the FBI, the field office in New York, get a FISA on Carter Page throughout all that time? Why did they decide to open up a counterintelligence investigation on him and not get a FISA warrant, whereas the FBI in D.C. decides they need one?
Well, because the FBI... because the FBI wanted to spy Trump campaign.
Exactly. That's
I mean, as I put it in the book, I mean, the FISA warrant, I mean, it's an electronic break-in, right? I mean, that's all that happened here. It was a break-in, like Watergate.
Yep.
The big difference is that this was using, instead of using former CIA guys, this was using active U.S. officials to spy on the Trump campaign. Is again, that, and as I like to remind people, what the FBI and other U.S. officials did is really bad, and I hope that they will pay. I hope that justice will be served. I'll put it like that. But a very, very important thing to remember is they didn't just do this as a matter of whim or to enhance their own deep state capabilities. Right? It was all done to benefit one person. Before the election, that was Hillary Clinton. It was done to benefit Hillary Clinton. That's why they were spying on the Trump campaign. It's important for people to remember that. Will Hillary Clinton ever, will she ever have to answer for what was done, at least in her name, if not with her knowledge? Who knows? But people should keep in mind that's what happened.
It was done to benefit Hillary Clinton and to protect President Obama. And
after the election, that's what it moves into. It's not just protecting Barack Obama. It's very, very interesting, right? It really is. It's an effort to tie down the Trump team because Trump goes in there and he says, I know he's going to undo lots of Obama's policies. If Obama goes in there with a, you know, with a what was it, a phone and a pen, and starts rewriting American U.S. policy, Trump was going to do basically the same. So yeah, after the election, a lot of this is an effort to preserve Barack Obama's policies and at least tie Trump down, if not knock him out, right? That's what's going on after the election. I agree. As well as that's the offensive part of the campaign. But remember, after the election, these guys move into offense and defense. The defensive part of the campaign is to cover up the stuff that they're in trouble for, that they do, you know, that they do before the election.
I agree. I think that a lot of this comes down to those emails and those missing emails and what was buried under the surface that was malfeasance on behalf of the Obama administration and them wanting to make sure that that never saw the light of day. Just knowing the scandal that had gone on there and what had gone on there. One more question for you. And then, so I did a lot of work on Fusion GPS and the possibility that they could actually have been working as a government contractor and abusing the 702 database under Admiral Rogers, the thing that kind of made the red flags go off. I don't know if you've looked too much into that. Is there any evidence outside of some of the transcripts from hearings that have been released that Fusion GPS was actually being paid by the FBI?
That's a very interesting question. I don't know. I mean, given everything that we've learned over the last several years, that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it would be another thing that we'd go for, you know, for Pete's sake. But I don't think there's any evidence yet pointing to that.
I will. I'll send you a piece that I did. The Hipsy sued Fusion GPS in court to get their bank records to take a look.
Right.
Fusion GPS argues, Lee, that they were only looking for Christopher Steele's payments. Right. So we'll give that stuff to you. And attorney for the Hipsy says, no. That's not all we're looking for. We're looking for other stuff, too. They ended up getting those bank records, but it never went public what was inside of them. So I'll send over that to you to take a look at. What's next? What happens now in the next 6, 8, 10 weeks?
Well, there's going to be more information released. We're going to see these transcripts again. I think they'll be important to, obviously I haven't seen them, but I just think they'll be important to provide some more detail. And again, the big thing is you have all these Obama officials saying, yeah, we have no evidence of collusion where we've been. Yeah, we talk about it, but there's no evidence of it. There might be, I believe that Sidney Powell has been posting that more documents regarding General Flynn are likely to be posted released as well.
Yep.
We see different reports that the Durham investigation is moving along. I mean, you know, and then we've seen reports, well, maybe by July, maybe by September. And I know that we want to see these things happen as quickly as possible. We don't want to see them obscured by the election or even postponed because of the election. But again, my concern is not that they're not doing their work. It appears again from the Flynn documents, it appears they're doing very serious work. Yep. And they know the story. My concern is while they are finding out what happened 2016, 2017, likely different parts of what the special counsel was up to, right? Certainly they're looking at the Flynn case. Nonetheless, the anti-Trump operation marches on, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we've been through an impeachment. They impeached the president.
There's another one coming if you read the tea leaves too.
Oh yeah.
Well, this is the title. I don't know if we talked about this before, but this is the title of my the book I'm finishing now called The Permanent Coup. This is what's going on. These guys are not going to let this drop. And, I suspect the president now understands. And it's certainly something that Congressman Nunes understands. I mean, we've all heard him speak about it. He talks about it in terms of the old football terminology, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. I mean, you got to get down there, and we're fighting with these people all the time. They're not going to give in. So what do you have to do? You just have to get in there and fight for it, because they're not stopping. They're not going to give up.
I'm really excited about a new book.
Yeah, me too. Me too. That's always been the biggest point for me, though, Lee, about frustration with all this. I had brought it up briefly before there, too, is they're not going to stop. We're never going to get that Scooby-Doo moment where you pull the mask off and everybody knows what happened there. We're never going to get that. So, you know, I totally understand. Hey, you know, one side has no rules and the other side is always preaching patience. This has to be watertight. But in the meantime, every passing day since December 2016, we have lost American minds forever. Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, every day we lose American minds. And if you could have gone back and written the playbook for the counter playbook for the media, what would you have done while all these investigations are going on behind the scenes, while Devin Nunes, people like him are doing his thing? What would you have done to at least try to keep American minds open and not have fallen victim in such profound ways to this nonstop coup?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people were doing that. I mean, you know, you had different people on TV. I mean, of course, Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson, Maria Bartiromo was very important in this way. I know that, you know, that she's had Congressman Nunes and Congressman Ratcliffe on the show a lot, Dan Bongino, and then all the different, you know, all the different press reporters as well. So, places like The Federalist. American greatness. I mean, I'm sure I'm going to be forgetting some people, but I'm forgetting a whole bunch of people. But there were people who were putting out real reports and who were saying what's going on. Now, the fact that it was difficult to penetrate this is an understatement. But remember what happened here. The ground was prepared so extensively so that even people. The idea that Donald Trump is a racist, or that Donald Trump is this, or that Donald Trump is a Russian spy. The ground had been prepared for so long to pierce through that veil and to get through it and to say, no, here are the facts, is extremely difficult, right? And you see even some press organizations who did good reporting, they had to start somewhere in the middle, right? So like, well, there's all this stuff about Donald Trump being a Russian spy, but is he really, right? It's like once that just shows you how you had to start on their ground. And once you're starting on that ground, it's very, very difficult. If you look at what they did, and again, you guys have heard me talk about how they were the press was the media was the essential component of the operation. None of this happens without them. If you really want to understand this whole story here, right, you have to strip away all of that. And you have to take it down to its foundations. And there are two things. You look at timelines, and then you look at quotes of the officials who were involved. Then you have to build it back up to figure out what happened. But with all the media information, all the media narrative around that, it's very, very, very difficult to get through it. So again, strip it down, timelines and quotes, whether it's James Comey, whether it's John Brennan, whether it's Andrew McCabe, whoever is in there, right? Take it all the way down and put it back together like that. That's how you understand what happened. That's what I mean. But all of the mortar was the press reporting, whether it's coming from the Washington Post or the New York Times or CNN, that's the mortar holding all of that garbage together. Very, very hard to fight.
I'd like to just ask one little throwaway question here to you that's a little unrelated, but this is the home stretch now. Who do you see, especially with all the problems that Joe Biden is having right now? Well, he's always had problems. I think he's always been an illusion. But especially now, who do you actually see as a Democrat nominee in November?
Barack Obama. I think that. I'm writing on this. It'll be both in my book, and I'm doing an article on this, which I'm finishing right now. What I mean by that, if you look at the Russiagate operation, you see a number of different avatars, right? One avatar is Christopher Steele. Actually, I named one of the chapters in The Plot Against the President, the avatar, talking about Christopher Steele. Another avatar, as we've learned, is Robert Mueller. Right. I mean, Robert Mueller wasn't the person who was running the special counsel. Mueller was the face they used to run an operation, right? They legitimized the operation, running it with a guy out front who would appeal to traditional and honest conservatives. Robert Mueller is a great man. He served his country honorably here and there and there, right? Robert Mueller was not running, as we know, was not running the investigation. As we saw on July 24th, Robert Mueller was missing a lot of details from that investigation. Now let's go to the 2020 campaigns, the 2020 election. Joe Biden, as even Democratic voters cannot help but fail to notice, is not the old Joe Biden, right? As it turns out, that doesn't matter, because Joe Biden is an avatar, and we've seen Obama over the last month and a half, rather more like over the last month, we've seen him show his hand more and more directly. So that's what's going on. The Democratic Party, right? It must be depressing for Democratic Party voters, for some of them anyway, right? It's like, we don't really have someone at the top of the ticket, tragically, sadly, or whatever. The man is not 100% there. Therefore, whoever the party chooses to be his vice president is actually the real presidential candidate, right? Can you imagine? It's difficult to imagine a more undemocratic way of selecting a candidate, right? The Politburo will choose the candidate. So whoever this is going to be, that's the actual candidate. Why doesn't it matter? Because the person who's behind the scenes, as we see more and more of an indication every day, is Barack Obama. So you asked me who I think is going to be the 2020 candidate. That's who it is.
So you think that they'll use Joe Biden as the face and then make someone attractive the vice president so he has a chance to win the election, but the president will technically be puppet master Obama?
I think that Barack Obama has been very clear signaling to Democratic voters that he's behind the scenes. Yes. And I think that's one of the things that will, you know, that soothes different people who might be upset about voting for a, some people are now evincing concern about Joe Biden and the allegations of sexual abuse, or they're at least appear to be evincing concern. Right. I mean, when we say Joe Biden, it's in quotation marks. Joe Biden is not there.
Yeah.
He's right.
Patently not there.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what is this about? Right? Are they really dying to launch whoever, Kamala Harris or Amy Klobuchar or Pete Buttigieg as a vice president? Is that what the exciting thing is for the Democrats? No, of course not. It's don't worry, America. I'm here. Barack Obama is here.
Interesting. Wow, great stuff. Lee, when is your book coming out?
Soon.
That's soon. Good. So yeah. I have another book to read immediately as soon as it's released. That's awesome. Can you pre-order yet?
Excellent. I don't think so. No.
Damn it.
No.
All right. Well, yeah. In that case, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's always a great pleasure to be speaking to you, whether we're speaking in front of your awesome audience or we're just texting. It's always a great pleasure to be talking to you guys.
Thanks, Lee. I didn't mean to step on you there. My apologies.
Really, appreciated. Appreciated, yeah. For sure.
Thank you guys very much.
Thanks. And so how about that?
What'd I tell you?
That was good.
What'd I tell you? Well, another good one with Lee. I hope he can come back sooner than 4 months.
You know, he wants to. I would love to have him on every month if we could. He's got some great insight and he knows some stuff. And I like people that know stuff. It's my
comment. No, we should have people like Lee Smith and Rich Barris on more often.
Rich definitely needs to come back.
Oh yeah, I'm working. Like I was saying to Lee right there in that final question. We're coming down the home stretch here. We need to talk demographics. We need to talk about polling, especially now that it's just. I mean, what I want to know just how polling has maybe the practice of polling has changed in the last couple of months, just because people are locked inside. Has it made it easier? Has it made it harder? I don't know.
Well, reach out to this man. I could text him too. We'll get him on. We'll try and get him on next week if we can. We had a lot of guests lately.
We have good guests too.
Yeah, for sure. All right, cool. Well, you've been listening to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Day Val and
Beans.
There she is.
You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you Friday.
Later.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.